Quiet, please. Quiet, please. Broadcasting System presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper and features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please, for tonight is called Not Enough Time.
Wait just a minute, will you, please? I gotta bust this thing up.
I'll only be a minute.
$140 worth of junk and 4 years' work. And here's a bale of notes that the editor of Astonishing Stories would give his IT for. He ain't gonna get them. Yeah, that is strictly that. No, it was a time machine. Yeah, one of those gadgets to travel in time, you know, turn it on and it takes you back 50 years and so on. You know, like Alley-Oop in the funny paper, like the stories H.G. Wells wrote. You know. Yeah, this was the dial you set for how far you wanted to go in time. And this was a decambulator. And here's a piece of the... Well, never mind what it was. It's none of your business. Sure wish I hadn't monkeyed with a time machine. Oh, this one worked. Sure. That's what's the matter, see? It worked. Well, I don't want any part of time machines, not after what happened to me with this one. You can make one for yourself if you want to, and if you can, but you're not going to get any help from me. Oh, they can be made all right, me. I'm just a bumble-fingered mechanic out of a garage, and I made one. But I'll give you my first and last piece of advice, Buster. Don't you do it. I saved up my dough, and working around a garage, I could glom onto a gadget here and there that Cliff Oswald didn't know about. I had a lathe there and some other machinery, and I did the rough hand work there. Then when I quit and rented this old busted-down farmhouse out here on Cemetery Road, I bought some more machinery, see, some stuff for precision work and some stock. A piece of iridium from that fountain pen factory in Fort Madison, Iowa. Two or three polystyrene plastics that they made for me in Parlin, New Jersey. Special crown glass prisms I had made here in town. And some other stuff. Quite a lot of other stuff. And try and find out what it was. You know, you'd be surprised how easy it is to drop out of sight in a small town. This place here is way out in the sticks past the cemetery, off on a side road that nobody's used for 20, 30 years. Then I'd done all my shopping in Peoria instead of here in Pekin. I never went downtown for anything. So, nobody knew I was here. It was just that easy. I put in nearly 4 years, like I said. And then, all of a sudden, the doggone thing worked. I was just sitting here, and I turned it on, see, and just like that, it was raining. Well, the sun was shining bright when I turned it on, and for a minute I couldn't figure it out. And then I remembered it rained the day before, and by golly, it was the day before, right then. How do you like that? Well, I stayed in yesterday for 10 minutes, and then, tick, we came back, and the rain stopped, and the sun was shining again. It wasn't even damp outside. Well, I'm not going into a lot of details that you wouldn't understand if I told them to you, but the net of the thing was I decided I'd really try it. But really. And that's the story. Now, supposing you intended to take a trip back 50 years in time, how'd you prepare for it? Well, I'll tell you what I did. First, I studied an old history of Tazewell County, paying particular attention to 1897, 50 years ago. Yeah, so as I wouldn't make any more bobbles than necessary. I picked out a place on a map where there wasn't any trees in 1897. I didn't want to find myself hanging from somebody's apple tree when the thing stopped. Then I bought my equipment. I got me a revolver, a camera, and a flashlight. Then some aspirin, and I was all fixed. I moved the gadget out in the back lot where the map said there wasn't any trees 50 years before, and I set it back to 50 years, and I was reaching for the release when I got a sudden fast thought. There I was, dressed in a double-breasted gray suit with white stripes and a blue sport shirt and a pair of brown and white shoes. It was the shoes, I guess. I looked down at him and I said, holy Moses, would I be a number in 1897 in this outfit? They'd throw me in the can before I could say howdy. Imagine. So I quick disconnected the machine from my wrist and put it back in the house and jumped in the car and beat it for Peoria in a theatrical costume house. Rolfe thought I was nuts, but I got the rig I was looking for. How do you like it? This here brown derby's a dinger, ain't it? Even with a dent in it. Then get a load of the shoes. Buttons. Hey, you know what? There ain't any place where you can buy a button hook today. Well, anyway, you want to hear the story. I got the machine out again and set it. And I took a long breath and I said, well, kid, hold your hat. Here we go. And I pressed the button. By golly, I thought I heard somebody calling me. Well, there couldn't have been.
You hold up your hands there, you hear me?
What? Now, look out with that gun, Buster.
You hold up your hands or I'll be forced to shoot.
Who do you think you are?
You'll find out soon enough. Keep your hands up now, you hear me?
This is a fine way to welcome a stranger, Bud.
This is the way I welcome strangers all the time. Don't give me any sass, either. Who are you?
My name's Walter McCoy.
What you doing here?
I'm a visitor.
Visiting who?
The sheriff.
Oh, you are, eh?
John Stout.
Pleased to meet you.
Huh?
I'm John Stout, stranger.
Oh, my God.
And you sure are going to visit me. Come on, march.
You see? Smart guy, me. I told you I studied that history of Tazewell County till my head hurt. The only name I could think of when this guy popped up from behind a hedge was the sheriff. Well, John Stout marched me over to a horse and buggy, and he buttoned me to a stanchion with the biggest pair of rusty handcuffs I ever saw and said, get up, Queenie, and away we went to the jailhouse. And my time machine lying on the ground out there 2 miles from where I was looking out of an iron-barred window. And it was all set to come back to 1947 in just 24 hours, whether I was there or not. How do you like that? I had a very pretty picture of me getting a 50-year jail sentence and getting out of Joliet just in time to come back to the house out on Cemetery Road and pick up where I left off, only at the age of 76 instead of 26. Very pretty, huh? Yeah, that's what I thought. Well, they had me up before Judge Curran good and fast, but try as they couldn't get anything on me.
Horse stealing.
I didn't steal any horses.
Lurking and lying in wait.
Well, I was just standing there.
Disturbing the peace?
I didn't say a word.
Disorderly conduct.
Well, I said to myself, I'll buy that. It can't be a jail sentence for disorderly conduct. And I've got $300 or $400 in my pocket, and I can afford the fine, but I got to get out of here. So I paid off $10 in costs. $11.96. Sure. Oh, I'd remember to get some old, big-sized bills, all kind of dirty, figuring they wouldn't examine the bills close enough so as I could get away if I got in a jam, you see, before anybody looked at the dates. Mm-hmm, I was a smart kid. It says here. By this time, I've got a lot less than 24 hours before the old machine takes off, and I'm beginning to get a small order of goose pimples on the back of my neck because I'm not exactly sure where the darn thing is. After all, I'd never been here before except 50 years later, you see. And if I missed the thing, oh, man. I thought, though, I'd kind of case the town a little bit, so if I wanted to come back, you know. Well, I walk up Court Street a block, and there on the corner of Fifth is Bill Kelly's livery stable, where Connigan's Ford agency is now. Right across the street, practically, from where I used to work for Cliff Oswald. There's nothing but a vacant lot there. So I go into the stable and hire me a rig. Get me, hire a rig. And pay in advance, and I take off. Did you ever drive a horse and buggy? Man, I was all over the lot. But I got out there after a fashion. Out where I thought I'd left the machine. So I tied the horse to a tree. Somebody'd come and get him, I figured, and he could eat grass. That is, if horses eat grass. And I started looking. It was just a great big field, see? No landmarks of any kind. I got more and more panicky because that old clock was going round and round and round. And then I saw a hole in the ground, a big hole, dirt piled up around it. And out of the corner of my mind, I sort of remembered seeing it when I landed, when Stout grabbed me. And all of a sudden, I had it. This old house I worked in is about 50 years old. And by golly, this was the foundation for it that somebody was digging. Oh, well, sure, I found the machine easy then, south of the excavation, about 50 yards, lying there, ticking away as if nothing had happened. Oh, boy, I said. Oh, boy. I practically kissed the thing. And then I jumped about 6 feet in the air.
What are you doing on our land, young man?
Wow. Wow, there was the most beautiful girl in the world. Just the most beautiful girl I've ever seen. Red hair. No makeup match. And I tell you, she looked beautiful even in an 1897 outfit. A brown dress down to her ankles and a white shirtwaist with big red polka dots on it. And a hat that, well, it looked like a dog's dinner. And she looked wonderful. And she pointed those big blue eyes at me and she said again,
"What are you doing on our land?"
And when I could get my breath, I said, "Who are you, lady?"
"My father and I merely happen to be the owners of this land, that's all."
"Well, I was, well, lady, I'm sorry."
"You're trespassing."
"Well, I'm sorry. I used to live there in that house you're going to build."
"What?"
"I'm going to live in, my name is Walter McCoy."
"Well, I'll thank you to get off our land, Mr. Walter McCoy."
Yeah, sure, I'll get off."
"Right away."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Well, go on."
"Well, lady, what's your name?"
"Carrie McKinstry. And this is Carrie McKinstry, so there."
"Carrie McKinstry. Gee."
"Sir?"
"We're both Max, Carrie."
"How dare you?"
"What?"
"A gentleman would address me as Miss McKinstry, sir."
"Sir? Well, I'll be darned."
"I don't understand you."
I said, look, we're both Max, see, maybe you're Irish, too."
"Are you Irish?"
"Irish descent."
"So are we."
"Well, what do you know?"
"About what?"
"Hello, Irish."
"Sir?" "You're fresh."
"You're beautiful."
"Take care, sir."
"Hey, do people really talk like that?"
"What people?"
"You live around here?"
"On Ann Eliza Street, down near the firehouse."
"Well, what you doing out here?"
"You ask an awful lot of questions."
"Well, I'm interested."
"You're a masher."
"A what?"
"A masher. Don't you try to mash me."
"My gosh, Miss McKinstry, I wouldn't hurt you."
"You certainly talk strangely, Mr. McCoy."
"Well, I come from a long way from here, see."
"Are you a drummer?"
"No, I used to play a little piano when I was a kid."
"I mean a traveling man."
"Well, yes. Yes, you might say I'm a traveling man. Yes, I guess I am."
"What are you doing here?"
Traveling, I guess."
"Well, then, you travel."
"Listen, Miss McCary, I have to wait a while."
"Why?"
"Well,
What's that machine thing there?"
"It's a gadget."
"Oh."
"Look, I have to wait a little while, Carrie. Let's you and me sit down and talk for a minute, will you?"
"Not in the habit of talking to persons I don't know, Mr. McCoy."
"You know me?" can just call me by name. Harry?
What? Why? Well, what would we talk about?
Let's talk about the future. Did you ever hear of love at first sight? Yeah, I always thought it was bunk, too. Did I? No. I wish you could have seen that girl. Red hair, blue eyes. Oh, I said that, don't I? Well, nobody's going to see her. Not me. We sat there on a pile of dirt. Now, I don't know what we talked about, though I guess I did most of the talking. I told her about automobiles and radio and skyscrapers and airplanes, I think. I think I did. And she sat there and didn't believe a word of it, but she loved it. We got along toward dark and we still sat there. And the sun went down across the river. Oh, man. Yeah. I can. I forgot for a minute she was out. Oh.
Sir, I'll have you know that I'm a respectable girl.
And I picked myself up out of the dirt and shoved my jaw back in place.
Oh, Walter. Walter, did I hurt you? Oh, Walter.
And the sound of her voice came back to me. Remember when I took off on this trip? Somebody yelled at me. And I didn't have any more time to think because Carrie had her arms around me and she was crying and kissing me. And yeah, it sure was love at first. Double. Carrie McKinstry and Walter McCall. October 5th, 1897. And then she pushed herself away from me suddenly.
There's somebody coming.
Huh? Who? Where?
Down the road. Look!
And I looked. I couldn't miss that dapple gray mare, Queenie. Even if I hadn't known of a sheriff's stout, I could hear way down the road the gong on the dashboard of his buggy. He was heading right for the place he found me.
It's the sheriff.
Well, let me out of here.
You'll have to hide. Quick! Oh, what would my father say? Walter, hide!
Yeah, but where?
In the cellar. Quick, jump in!
I must go down cellar one of these days and see if my footprints are still down there on the cellar floor. I drove myself right up to the knees jumping in. So I scrabbled some dirt from me and squeezed up in the corner. Machine digging away right under my chin. I heard him coming.
Why, how do you do, Sheriff
Top? Oh, howdy, Carrie. Seen anything of a miscreant?
A miscreant? Betsy Notion.
Well, I figured he'd come out here where I captured him before.
He's captured? What? Who is it?
He's a doggone counterfeiter, that's who.
A counterfeiter?
Took him up for disorderly conduct, and he paid his fine, and all the coins was dated from 1932 to 1947. 50 years from now.
Oh, no, Sheriff.
My goodness, yes. But he ain't gonna take me in. Put him in jail for 100 years. So you ain't seen him, Carrie? And I waited in the dirt, holding my breath. I waited 10 minutes.
No. No, Sheriff. I haven't seen anybody.
Well, all right. If you do, though, Carrie, let me know. Might even be some kind of reward.
All right. All right, I will. Good night, Sheriff.
Don't forget.
No, I won't forget.
You can come out now, counterfeiter.
Did I say she had red hair? Yes. Brother, I've been chewed out by a... But Carrie, she threw the book at me. And all the time crying, that was right. Well, finally, when she slowed down, I started to talk. Look, I was in love with her. That was day before yesterday. That was 15 years ago. So I confessed. I told her all about the machine and how I had to go back with her and be stuck here. No, she didn't believe me at first, but after a while, I guess I convinced her. I know I confessed. And I told her I was in love with her. And the moon was coming. She told me she thought she was in love with me. She knew she was in love. There's a fix to be in, brother. Well.
You can't stay here, Walter.
No, I guess not.
Oh, Walter, I still love you. I'm a shameless woman, but I love you.
You see? I looked at the machine. I had the late o'clock this morning. We couldn't sit there in the field all night, I said. I'll take you home, Carrie, and we can talk about it on the way. So she said, all right, and we climbed into the buggy and started back to town. You know, you can say what you want to about this world we got today, but you've never been riding along an unpaved road with a hedge fence along one side and big elm trees lining the other side and a lap robe over your knees. And the big round harvest moon shining down above the hills up towards Billy Moore's place. And lonesome little lights from kerosene lamps shining out of windows off in the distance. And a girl alongside. Ah, that was a pretty good world they had 50 years ago. A pretty good world. I wish we had it now. Yeah, I should have stayed. But I didn't. Well, we got to the house. There wasn't anybody home. My father was a railroad man who was out on the run somewhere. Decatur or Springfield or Bloomington or somewhere. We went to the house. I'd seen the picture. She lit a kerosene lamp. And there it was. Brother, I should have stayed. Rag carpet on the floor. A pump at the kitchen sink that went meow, meow when she pumped the water for the coffee. You know, there wasn't a tin can in the kitchen cupboard. Yeah, I should have stayed. So we were having a little supper in the bottom, you know, low voice, eating pork chops and applesauce, and there was an apple pie on the table, and coffee, and well, believe it or not, in a mustache cup. It was awful nice in the other night. And there was a knock on the door.
Who's that?
And the door opened. A great big tall woman walked in. She jumped when she saw me.
Oh, well, excuse me.
Why, good evening, Mrs. Stiles.
No, that company, Carol. I wouldn't come bursting in like this.
It's all right, Mrs. Stiles. Mrs. Stiles, this is Mr. McCoy.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Mr. McCoy.
How do you do?
I've been poorly, but I'm tolerable now, thank you. You a stranger in town, Mr. McCoy?
Mr. McCoy is a stranger in town.
My, certainly. Nice and cozy, ain't it? Think your father would approve, Dad? Not that it's any of my business, of course, but it is a little odd. Isn't it, Mr. McCoy?
Yes. Yes, it's very odd.
Mr. McCoy is a friend of mine, Mr. Stout.
Well, I should think so.
Mrs. Stout lives next door, Walter. I forgot to tell you.
I see, and Mr. Stout lives there, too.
Of course, he's up at the county jail quite a lot. He's the sheriff, you know.
Yes, I know.
Yes, we know.
He's out looking for a mystery or something.
Is he?
A stranger in town.
Is that so?
He'll be called any minute. Maybe he'll drop in.
Oh, well, I got to be going.
Yes, Walter is in a hurry. He just stopped in for a bite to eat.
Well, I just happened to see that rig from Big Tanner's livery stable out in front. And since I put that rig sitting out in front of McKinney Street, so I decided to stop in for a minute.
Well,
where did you come from, did you say, Mr.? What was the name?
Why, McCoy, Mrs. Stout.
That's what I thought Gary said. Well, good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Walter.
I get it.
Look what I've done to you.
It's all right, honey, if I can get out of here before Stout comes home.
She'll tell him.
You kidding? Sure she will. I don't see how fast that horse of Mr. Kelly's is.
You'll have to hurry, Walter. Oh, Walter, darling.
Yeah, it can't be helped, honey. But I wish...
Oh, Walter, you will come back, won't you?
You bet I'll come back. And I'll make me another of these machines, and I'll come and get...
He's in there. He's right in there with Charlie.
Wait, turn out the light.
Come out of that counterfeit, Abe. Come on.
Back door, Walter, quick.
Hear me? Come out, boy.
I'll come back, Gary. I'll come back.
Hurry, hurry.
I'm coming in there.
Just kiss me, quick. Oh, Walter, I love you. I love you. Come back. Come back.
I'll come back.
Well, where'd he go?
Hurry, Walter. Run, run.
And I ran. Brother, how I ran. Over a board fence, and I could hear the sheriff yelling right behind me. And the machine was ticking and ticking, and I was wishing it was 8 o'clock and wondering what had happened when I did come back to 1897, and then... And I was dodging an automobile in the street in Pekin, Illinois in 1947. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, the machine was set for 8 o'clock, and it was 8 o'clock, only 12 hours earlier than I figured. So I walked on out here. I kept wondering what happened to Sheriff Stout when I disappeared. What happened to Bill Kelly's horse and buggy? And what happened to Harry McKinstry? Well, I came in the house. I turned on the light. I didn't see anybody at first. I heard her voice. What? And there in my easy chair was the old woman. And she spoke to me.
I waited so long. 50 years. I've waited, Walter. And you didn't come back.
When I came to, there wasn't anybody in the house but me. Just me. In a time machine. I told you this place of mine is close to the cemetery road. And there's a funeral going by in the road now. No, I don't need to ask who it is. It's an old lady, 74 years old, who waited and waited and waited for a sweetheart that never came back. So there isn't any use of that time machine anymore. She said, I never came back. Didn't she? You have listened to Quiet Please. It is written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell. And Nancy Sheridan played Carrie. Sheriff Stout was Donald Briggs, and Catherine Meskill was Mrs. Stout. The music for Quiet Please is composed and played, as usual, by our good friend Gene Plazzo. Now for a word about next week's Quiet Please, here is our writer-director, Willis Cooper.
I call next week's story Camera Obscura, which, if you understand Italian, means dark room. You may like this story, what takes place in this dark room.
And so, until next week at this time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
Quiet Please comes to you from New York. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.